Greetings once again to all of you out there from right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's so good to be back with you now that the dust has settled on the election and the personhood campaign out here in Colorado. We here at the McBurney compound have been able to focus on, well, matters of relative import. Big news at the McBurney compound. 17-month-old Alexis has made pee-pee in the potty. That's right. It's the big news of the week. For those of you without children, you may not understand the ramifications. But it means that our life, at least the life of my extremely attractive audio engineer, is on its way to becoming exponentially simpler in that the baby can pee-pee in the potty. Simpler until we have another baby. Now, if we were to have another baby, that would complicate your life by another factor of 10. So that's right. We've got a 9-year-old. So anyway, that's the big news around these parts. But from the world, news from the world, after all, this is the Weekly Worldview. It's a view of the world. That may make some of you uncomfortable, frankly, but that's why we're here. But we hope to entertain you and educate you along the way as well. So let's start out from Breitbart's website. I don't have a dateline on this story. How unprofessional is that? Well, it may not have a... Let's see. It's in Canada. So you get the idea, you know. Everybody's polite, and it's very cold where this story is. A new method, according to the Breitbart website, a new method uses cells from a patch of a person's skin and transforms it into blood that is a genetic match without using any human embryonic stem cells. That's according to a study to be published in the journal Nature, the upcoming edition. With the ability to create blood for transfusion from a person's own skin, the advance means someday patients needing blood for surgery or to treat anemia could bypass the blood bank and derive the necessary supply from their own cells. It says from themselves, but this is amazing. According to the study, researchers have been able to perform the skin-to-blood transformation in the past. But in those cases, they were using human pluripotent stem cells, which you and I know as embryonic stem cells. So in the past, they would have to kill and eat babies in order to make this happen, figuratively. Well, literally, I suppose. But researchers say the new method, listen to this, this is flat out mind-boggling. Researchers say their new method can create enough blood for a transfusion from a 4x3 centimeter patch of skin. 3x4 centimeters. That's amazing. How many of us have some extra skin that we could get rid of anyways? It could be a real boon for the plastic surgery industry. You know, we take away the gobbler from under your chin, and then we store it in case you need a blood transfusion, Grandma. How about that? I think it's just phenomenal. I tell you, the potential of adult stem cells, what we commonly call adult stem cells, is pretty fantastic. And I encourage and I seek to promote and support all manner of research into the adult stem cell field, the adult stem cell field. I'm all for that. Anything that can stop Grandma and Grandpa from killing and eating babies in order to live longer, or to fix their liver so they can have another highball, I'm all for it. Not that I'm against Grandma and Grandpa having a highball now and then. Okay? But, you know, if your liver's shot, well, I mean, maybe instead of seeking to introduce embryonic stem cells in order to repair your liver, you could put the highball down. And in the meantime, hopefully the rest of us who are sane will figure out a way to save you from yourself. All right. Now, speaking of saving us from ourselves, this is an article from the American Spectator Online. Spectator.org is the website. I highly recommend it. A lot of good writers. Jeffrey Lord being one of them. Jeffrey Lord, in his Veterans Day post, he says, the announcement that the Food and Drug Administration wants to insist cigarette packs contain what the Washington Post calls gruesome pictures of what happens if one smokes cigarettes may raise an interesting, if unwelcome, question. So we've all heard the reports. The FDA wants to take a page out of the European lexicon and introduce pictures of emaciated, dying people and cancer-ridden lungs on cigarette packs. And in fact may compel cigarette companies to do just that if they have their way. And Jeffrey Lloyd points out that this brings up an interesting, if unwelcome, question. And the question is, from Mr. Lord, and this is the very first thing I thought of when I heard this story, but I don't post at spectator.org. But Mr. Lord does, and great minds think alike. Mr. Lord's interesting, if not unwelcome, question is, how long will it take before there's a move in the pro-life community to require abortion clinics to have photographs of aborted babies in their waiting rooms? Well, it is an interesting question. Now, I wouldn't pose it this way, Mr. Lord, because I think this really just points up the hypocrisy of the government, that they would require cigarette companies to put photos of dying, emaciated, cancer-infested victims on their cigarette packs, while they encourage women to kill their babies and tell them that it's good and healthy, and it's you're basically like Thomas Jefferson. If you do, you're exercising your constitutional rights. They deny the obvious links between abortion and a host of mental and physical problems that women incur after participating in this barbaric activity. Yet, if you put a camel in your mouth, well, the government's right there to wag their finger at you and shame you and to try to scare you with the truth about smoking. See, they want to scare you with the truth about smoking, but they still want to sell the smokes and get the tax money, which is an interesting hypocrisy in and of itself, let alone the fact that they promote abortion as a right to be celebrated while denying the obvious physical, mental, spiritual problems associated with women who are victimized by abortion. I have a theory. I don't know if I said this last week. My dear, you'll have to tell me if I'm repeating myself. What's that? You never listen? Well, that's not very encouraging. Yeah, I think that better than 90% of women who have abortions are coerced in some manner, more than likely by a man, I'll bet. Someday perhaps a study will be undertaken to find out what was it that made you decide to kill your baby. Was it a free choice? Were you just following the wishes of the founding fathers to exercise your constitutional rights, or were you coerced by a man? And then, you know, that brings to mind the ever-present argument against restricting all abortion, making it all illegal. There's the immediate argument of, well, what about rape and incest? Well, most likely women who are victimized in that way, I mean, what are the odds that the actual criminal is the one doing the coercion to kill the baby? I mean, it's just amazing that the that the pro-choice left, as they like to call themselves, the pro-abortion community, has built this house of cards. Their arguments are literally a house of cards. And I pray that a strong wind is blowing. And in one fell swoop, once, if you're familiar with the house of cards, you know, once just a single card at the bottom comes loose, the whole thing topples to the ground. And well, let's hope for it, let's pray for it, let's keep working for it. I understand there's going to be legislation introduced on the ballot, a ballot initiative in Mississippi. Measure 26 in Mississippi will be up for a vote in 2011 when nobody's paying attention. And maybe we can slip one past the goalie out there in Mississippi. That'd be great. Okay, let's move on. News of the world from the Justice File. A story from the Telegraph over in London. A Christian woman has been sentenced to hang in Pakistan after being convicted of defaming the prophet Muhammad. Yeah, Asia Bibi. She's a 45-year-old mother of five. She denies the blasphemy and told investigators that she was being persecuted for her faith in a country where Christians face routine harassment and discrimination, that being Pakistan. Christian groups and human rights campaigners have condemned the verdict and called for the blasphemy laws to be repealed there in Pakistan, where I believe you can be executed for converting to Christianity and executed for trying to convert someone else to Christianity, or maybe even making an off-color joke about Mohammed. Even that can get you, well, sentenced to be hung. So she's going to appeal the sentence, and the story from the Telegraph tells us that the higher courts typically overturn these sentences. Now, we only hear about these cases once in a while, but I wonder how many local maniac Muslims there in Pakistan carry out these death sentences before any of these stories ever make the wires and before there's any opportunity for appeal under the Sharia law that they so much want to foist upon the Western world. Speaking of that, let's go to Oklahoma City. Now, how do you follow up a story about Muslims in Pakistan? How do you follow that up in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma? Well, walk with me on this. From Oklahoma City, the Associated Press, a federal judge has issued a temporary restraining order blocking a state constitutional amendment that prohibits state courts from considering international or Sharia law when deciding cases. So 70% of the voters there in Oklahoma City, the paranoid gun and faith clingers out there in Oklahoma City, 70% of them said, no Sharia law, please. Can we keep that out of Oklahoma? Seems reasonable. But a judge, Judge Vicky Miles LaGrange, has put a stake saying, wait a minute, we don't want to limit the ability of the court to consider international and even Islamic law when deciding cases in Oklahoma, for crying out. Oklahoma, I said. Yeah, not San Francisco, not Marin County, not New York City. We're talking Oklahoma here. Anyway, she has issued this restraining order, restraining the votes of the people to say no Sharia. She issued a restraining order in a lawsuit filed by the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations there in Oklahoma. He says that the ballot initiative, the constitutional amendment, stigmatizes his religion. And, you know, I'm not going to argue that, you know, if you're a Muslim, you might take that as a slap, that we don't want to consider your Sharia law in Oklahoma City. And, yeah, I suppose in one sense it stigmatizes the Muslim religion, but then again, so do all the bombings, the female circumcision, the beheadings, the xenophobia that keeps even one church out of Mecca. I mean, that stigmatizes your religion in the eyes of we, the sane, the Westerns, the Westerners, you know, whatever Christians are left here in the West. Don't give up. Doug McBurney. I'm not sure if the power of that guitar solo translates across the internet, but I have a hard time turning that one off. Please, be quiet. Let the guy play the guitar. Vito Bratta, currently residing in the Where Are They Now file from the 80s. Yeah, he ran into some problems there, carpal tunnels or something. Just a sad story. All right. But not as sad as that last story from... All right. That's just a cheap grasping for a segue. Let's just move on. I want to... You know what? Other big news around the McBurney household is that, as you may or may not know, we are a homeschool family here at the McBurney compound. Uh-huh. Yeah, the barbed wire points out around our compound, trying to keep the world out. And the children's computer has... Well, I mean, it's seen better days. And so I'm pondering, possibly considering, getting a new laptop and donating my laptop to the McBurney Compound School for the children and getting a Mac, switching to a Mac. I saw the new MacBook Air. On a well, it was a news story. It was really a commercial, thinly disguised as a news story. And I'm very interested in the whole idea of flash memory, which is, you know, I would have to give up a little bit in sheer capacity, but the speed and everything and you know, all around me, my friends are dropping like flies in the sense that they're all getting Macs, and. I just want to solicit any advice from anyone out there who has made the transition from the Stone Age, the PC,
hey.
Windows. this is what they tell me, to the Mac. And is it worth it, and will I want to kill myself in the first couple of weeks? I just don't know. I would have to get Microsoft Office because I'm pathetic and hooked on that, you know. But so that's the other big... Oh, anyway, I'm talking about this with a friend of mine, a computer type, I think. Anyway, a Mac type. And he said, well, Doug, if your kid's computer's broken, why don't you just go get them a used laptop for $150 and just keep using your laptop, which is perfectly fine? And I said, well, you know, economically, that makes a lot of sense. But please shut up. I want a new computer. I want a new laptop. It's been how long? I forget who I was talking to, but they made a lot of sense. I had to exit that conversation. I said, you're not helping at all. I want to spend a few thousand dollars. Get a new laptop. Anyway, so if you have any advice or if you can tell me, you know, what kind of torture I'm going to go through if I do decide to make the move to the MacBook Air, which just looks really cool. Just let me know, please. I'm soliciting your advice openly right now. Please pause the program and send me a yay or a nay. We're taking an unscientific poll. Should Doug get a Mac? The other friend I was talking to, he said, you know, a Mac is okay. He said, you know, the hardest part about getting a Mac. And I figured it was probably, yeah, I want to know. What's the worst part? He said the hardest part is telling your mother you're gay. I've heard that joke before. Anyway, that's what I'm going through here. Now that the campaign's over, I don't know what to do with myself. So I sit around pondering ways to squander what little fortune we've managed to squirrel away here at the McBurney compound. All right. Now, let's move on. Let's go into the domestic tranquility, the justice file here. Out of Sacramento, California, a South Sacramento man was arrested last week on 3 counts of murder after his family was found shot to death. Kaui Saturn is the gentleman's name, and... Now, this is just an aside. This is a horrible story. This is just another example of the rampant epidemic of familial violence. Kaui Saturn, apparently got into his wife late last Monday night. And when their 19 and 22-year-old sons tried to intervene, he grabbed a shotgun and opened fire, killing all of them. His two daughters and a nephew had fled the house, thankfully, and survived. That is out of the capital city there, Sacramento, California. But Kaui Saeturn. Anyway, it's the epidemic of familial violence here in the United States is obviously not isolated only to your average white folks. Because I can't even pronounce Kouei is the fella's name, and hopefully they will spell it right on his death certificate when they put him to death. But it's Sacramento. I doubt that'll ever happen. But don't you think that a swift, effective, and painful death penalty would make people like Kaui think twice before you pick up a shotgun? Maybe not. Maybe these people are certifiably insane. But just disturbing. All right. And now let's get to the... I want to talk again about a topic I've addressed in the past. The Innocence Project, founded by, oddly enough, Barry Scheck, one of the lyingest, low-life, scum lawyers who has ever walked the face of the planet, is now trying to redeem his pathetic and corrosive life by getting off murderers, and he's founded this Innocence Project. Here's a story out of Houston. The execution of a Texas man whose plea for DNA testing was ignored. The Innocence Project says it shows procedures and laws covering capital punishment need to be changed. And you know what that means. They want to end the death penalty because it's not working. Now, I'll agree that the death penalty is not working. I'll even agree that there are probably cases of men who were not guilty of the particular crime of for which they were convicted who have been executed. I'm willing to concede that point. But just because it's not working doesn't mean we end it, Barry, you scumbag, lowlife, dirtbag. I hate Barry Scheck. I really hate that guy. I remember when I watched the O.J. Simpson verdict with all my friends at work. We all literally, we broke from work, and we all gathered in the back to watch the O.J. Simpson verdict on television. And I felt like I had been kicked in the stomach at that moment. It was an important transitional moment in my life. Was the O.J. Simpson verdict. That's when I realized, that's when a red flag went up. Doug, things are not right. When O.J. Simpson cut those people's heads off and then walked away. All right, the case in point here, the case under question, is the case of one Claude Jones. Jones was the 40th execution back in the year 2000, a record, according to the Associated Press, a record that still stands and in the nation's busiest death penalty state. So 40 executions in a month, I'm sorry, in a year, is the record. Yeah, and that is the record. Now, I wonder how many murders there were in Texas that year. Well, let's not get off on that. Let's stick to the story at hand. Now, there was a piece of hair involved that was the only physical evidence prosecutors used to tie Jones to a fatal shooting during a liquor store robbery back in 1989, DNA tests have shown that the hair did not come from Mr. Jones. So here we have the possibility that Mr. Jones was put to death for a crime that he did not commit, and Barry Scheck and all of the bottom feeders like him are standing up asking for a repeal of the death penalty. Why do these lawyers want to repeal the death penalty so bad? Well, I think, number one, it's because so many of them are guilty of things for which they should probably be executed, that they want to make sure that there's no chance that they're ever going to get run up on a death penalty case. And secondly, I'm certain that they've done the math, and they know that it would turn into an awful lot of business for trial lawyers if the death penalty were repealed. The ensuing litigation regarding various cases, along with the increase in crime, would just ensure the longevity of their pathetic, worthless, and corrosive careers. All right, so let's get back to the case of Claude Jones. So the piece of hair turns out it's not his. And here's what Barry Scheck says. Now, this is what's important. You've got to listen to what Mr. Scheck is saying here, because he doesn't come right out and say it. But if you can read above a fourth grade level, you should be able to pick up on this. Scheck said, quote, "While some may say this case isn't the Holy Grail to show Jones definitely was innocent, I think that in and of itself it's pretty significant, and only a cynical view would say that this is not important, that this doesn't matter." So did you catch what Mr. Scheck said there? He said, "Well, some say this case isn't the Holy Grail." What that tells me is that Mr. Scheck is seeking the Holy Grail. What is the Holy Grail to Mr. Scheck? That single case that will end the death penalty in the United States. That's what Mr. Scheck is seeking desperately. And he will work, I believe, until he finds it. He is searching for the hammer with which him and his low-life lawyer friends can destroy justice. The foundational instruction in any justice system must be the death penalty for capital crimes. For without the death penalty, there can be no justice system. It'll be just a system, as a friend of mine so famously says. That's Bob Enyard over at KGOV.com. So Barry is on a search for the Holy Grail. I wonder if Barry Scheck is pro-choice. Has anyone ever asked that or researched that? If you're sitting out there in your mom's basement and you're not working, I would like to enlist you to please research whether or not Barry Scheck is pro-choice when it comes to the issue of killing innocent children. I would like to know that. Okay. Now, a reporter in this story, which was from who now? The Associated Press. A reporter reminds us, in the nearly 35 years since capital punishment was reinstated in the United States, there has never been a case in which someone definitively was proven innocent after being executed. Now, Barry Scheck and the Scheckmeisters over at the Innocence Project have gotten a number of fellas out of prison and have cast doubt on a number of cases, but never has there been a case in which someone definitively was proven innocent after being executed, that despite the name of Barry Scheckenjive's organization, the Innocence Project. They have yet to find anyone they can prove innocent. Now, let's talk about Claude Jones briefly. Claude Jones' criminal record dated back to 1959. While serving a 21-year prison sentence in Kansas, he poured a flammable liquid on his cellmate and set him on fire, killing him. Killing him, I said. And 3 days after the 1989 Texas shooting, he was identified as the robber of a suburban Houston bank. He was arrested nearly 3 weeks later in Fort Myers, where he was charged with robbery and bank robbery there in Fort Myers. So here we have a serial criminal, obviously a danger and a threat to society, and Barry Scheck just wants to plant a big sloppy kiss all over his memory and make all of us feel like Neanderthals for wanting to put these bastards down. And I'm about sick of it, Mr. Scheck. The Innocence Project, indeed. You're a liar, sir. You're the spawn of the devil himself, in my humble opinion. All right. On a happier note, well, I don't want to say a happy note, but at least on a positive note, this is from NBC in Connecticut. A New Haven jury has decided Stephen Hayes should die for his part in the murders of Jennifer Hawk Pettit and her daughters, Haley and Michaela, in Cheshire, Connecticut. You all know the story of the home invasion, where he abuses the mother, tortures the daughters, kills the mother, ties the daughters, sets the house on fire, burns them to death. But did you catch this? A New Haven jury has decided Stephen Hayes should die for his part in the murders. Now, I understand that there are other defendants in the case, but I just don't like splitting hairs to this degree. Mr. Hayes and anyone who was an accomplice in any form or fashion Anyone who gave him directions, anyone who drove the car, anyone who had knowledge of this crime is just as guilty of every aspect of this crime as the other conspirators. He should die for the murders of Jennifer Hawk Pettit and her daughters. I don't care what his part was in it. We can settle that up in court, but he should die for the murders because he is responsible. All right. Apparently, let's see here. It took jurors 4 days of deliberations to reach the decision about whether or not to kill this man after he burned teenage girls to death in their own house. How do you deliberate for 4 days? I could understand if you were trying to pick out the most heinous means of which to carry out the death penalty. I could spend 3 or 4 days just trying to figure out the worst possible way to kill this fella. But to spend 4 days trying to decide whether or not to kill him, judiciously execute a madman, murderer, it doesn't bode well for the future of Western civilization, is all I'm saying. If it takes 12 of my peers 4 days, just doesn't bode. Judge John Blue, the judge in the case, warned everyone as the death penalty was being announced to keep their emotions in check. And I don't like that either. How do you keep your emotions? Can you imagine the father sitting in the courtroom? The father lived. He's sitting in the courtroom. The man who killed his wife and burned his daughters alive is within striking distance. And the judge warns him to keep his emotions in check. Now, as Hayes was sentenced, he showed no emotion. It was easy for him. He's a mad dog killer. He showed no emotion. And apparently, the husband who survived was allowed to show no emotion either. A Hayes defense attorney, listen to this. Hayes defense attorney quoted Mahatma Gandhi when he spoke to the media after the verdict. Mahatma, or Gandhi, or whatever, the Mahatma, I think. He apparently said, "An eye for an eye makes the whole world go blind." So he quotes Mahatma, that an eye for an eye makes the whole world go blind. Mr. Defense Attorney, in this case, like so many other capital cases, an eye for an eye in one case provides the whole world the opportunity to see justice clearly. Thank Angus and the boys. Thank you, Angus. Thank you, Bob. They're sending that one out to Stephen Hayes and to Barry Scheck and the defense attorney and all of those guys. I mean, enjoy the ride, Stephen Hayes. My goodness, the sad thing is he'll sit alive in Connecticut on death row for who knows how long. He will be alive after we've all forgotten the shock and horror that we felt when we first learned that a man burned 2 teenage girls alive in their home. Now, the judge, instead of asking the father to keep his emotions in check, well, following a speedy appeal in which all the facts of the case are checked, the judge should have allowed the father to express his emotions upon Mr. Stephen Hayes. I just can't imagine how I would carry on with my life after that point. I just can't even imagine it. Without the opportunity to kill the man, who killed my family. Without the opportunity to kill him with my own hands, I don't know if I could carry on. I think I would have to... Well, I would need to find an outlet, is all I'm saying. And I think that the emotions that Mr. Mr. Hawk Pettit is feeling, the father who survived, I think they're righteous and just. His desire to see this man repaid in kind for his evil, wicked. I mean, it doesn't get any more heinous than that, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, if we can't all agree that Stephen Hayes and his conspirators, if we can't agree that they must receive the death penalty swiftly and painfully, if we cannot agree on that, I'm afraid we need to part ways. Yeah, you need to go start your own country, and I need to go start mine, because it's an irreconcilable difference, an irreconcilable disagreement in our worldviews. All right. Speaking of the decline and fall of Western civilization, let's move to New York City from the Sun-Times of London. Sears department store will be open on Thanksgiving Day for the first time in its history this coming Thanksgiving. So in pursuit of mammon, in pursuit of profits, Sears has decided to take the day set aside for Americans to thank God for the bounty with which he has blessed us. Sears has decided to turn that into a doorbuster sale. And Sears isn't the only one. A number of retailers this year have decided, in the face of economic difficulties, that they're going to open on Thanksgiving Day with doorbuster sales. So there you have it. There's the state of post-Christian America as we gather around to thank the doorbusters for all the blessings upon us and upon our progeny that retailers have blessed us with. It's just sad. That's all. It's just sad. It's not the end of the world. Don't get me wrong. It's just sad. Speaking of sad, let's go to, let's see, this is an odd website. I got this from a website called YourTango.com. Now, normally it would scare you to go to a website called YourTango. I have no idea what this website's about, but here's the story. The number of women in America without children has risen to an all-time high of 1 in 5, doubling since the 1970s, when 1 in 10 women ended their childbearing years without having a baby. This, according to the Pew Research Center. Yeah. They say childlessness has increased across racial and ethnic groups and most educational levels. The reason? What's the reason for... the reason they say there are a number of them. One, delaying marriage. People are getting married later. Second, they say there is a drop in societal pressure to be a parent. Yeah. I agree with that. And third, they say improvement in birth control options and its effectiveness. So to me, this is a barometer of a civilization that is basically snuffing itself out. We start delaying marriage, there's no pressure to have kids, and we come up with incredibly efficient means of birth control. I mean, it's the three strikes rule, folks. We're headed in the wrong direction. We need more kids. We need more people who want kids. And birth control, it's like I said last week. What would mark a civilization more to its credit? Devising a way to choke off and kill the next generation, or devising a method by which we could take a single cell zygote, blastocyst, if you will, and bring it in a lab to birth? Which do you think the annals of history and God himself would honor more? The guy who invented RU486, or the fellow who invents the artificial womb that goes from one cell to birth? Just ponder that. And if you think it's birth control, well, I don't know if you should stop listening to this show, or maybe you need to listen more. I suppose I would ask you to listen more. But if that's your opinion, I don't really care. Dr. Laura Corio, who's a member of... Oh, this is from AOL. Oddly enough. She's a member of the AOL Health Medical Advisory Board. She said for some, the reason behind delaying parenting is simple joie de vivre. So is that what joie de vivre is now? It doesn't involve kids? I mean, that's pathetic. I mean, if you think your life is complete because you've got a BMW and cable TV and high-speed internet and an iPad and an iPhone and an iPod and a MacBook Air, I mean, if you really think that that's what's going to give you joie de vivre, well, you're just missing the point. No, I think people will know what joie de vivre means. If you don't know what joie de vivre means, look it up. I'm not going to speak to a sixth grade level. Educate yourselves. She says, people are freer. They're enjoying their lives. They're traveling. They're shopping. They're eating out. Putting a baby into the situation is going to change everything. I don't know. I mean, I tell young people that putting a baby in the situation is going to make everything better. It's going to be difficult, don't get me wrong. It's not going to be a party 24/7. You might not be able to get that next Beamer. Okay, possibly, but maybe not. And besides, who's going to take care of you when you're old and someone needs to wipe your butt and change your diapers? Think about that. How about simple self-interest? You all know my theory on having at least 5 children, right? Have I already told that? Probably too many times. If you need to have at least 5 kids. Because here's the thing. One of them's going to end up in jail. One of them is going to end up living in your basement forever. 2 of them are going to have lives of their own, and they're going to be very successful, and they're just not going to have the time, and they may not have the money to take care of you when you're old. But if you have at least 5, there's a good chance that one of them will be successful enough to put you into a decent home when you're old. Or maybe hire a nurse to come and take care of you. Or maybe the kid who lives in your basement, here's the thing, the kid in your basement rarely has the motivation that it would take to change your diapers on a regular basis. So I'm just saying, do the math. If you're not enlightened, if you're not a Christian, then at least think about your own self-interest and the survival of the species. Ignorant, stupid fools don't want kids. What a bunch of morons. According to the study, white women remain the most likely not to have a child. Big shock there, right? But the childless rate has grown more quickly for blacks, Hispanics, and Asians over the past decade, according to the figures. So, I mean, you saw the... this just reminds me of a Newsweek cover that came out soon after, I think, Obama's stimulus plan passed, and it said, we're all socialists now. We need a new cover on, let's say, Better Homes and Gardens that would just come out and say, we're all hedonists now. Well, no kids. Let's eat, drink, and be merry, or at least what we think is merry. That's the thing. People without kids, they don't understand the level of happiness and joy that you can achieve in your children. And you're missing out. You've been conditioned by society to think that children are a constant burden and a headache when they're not. They're mostly joy and fun, mostly. All right. I'm running out of time. We've got Gloria Steinem here from the Associated Press. Gloria Steinem has come out in Philadelphia, and she says the notion of having it all for women is largely a myth. Women have made huge strides in the workplace over the past several decades, but with no reduction in their amount of responsibility for child rearing and household duties, says one Gloria Steinem. Steinem told a group of several hundred attendees, many of them psychologists, physicians, and nutritionists. Whoa. What a fun crowd that's got to be. She says that women cannot have it all unless and until men have an equal role in rearing children. She said, while it's largely accepted that women can do many of the jobs that men can, it's not yet accepted that men can do as good a job at bringing up children and caring for the home as women. Well, let me tell you, just an unscientific survey here in the McBurney compound, men cannot do a good job bringing up children or taking care of the home. That's why we have mom. Now, I do try to do my part, but mostly out of my own selfishness. I know it sounds bad, but I love my kids, and I love hanging out with my kids. I love taking them to the park and to the swimming pool and just hanging out with them, spending time with them. I love to do it. Gloria Steinem, was she ever married? I wonder if she ever met a man who would put up with the hellion children I'm certain she would raise. Anyway, I'm sure Gloria never found. She just never found a fella who could help around the house. That's pretty sad for Gloria. But kind of appropriate that she would end up. So she says women can't have it all, and the problem is men. Shocking revelation from Gloria. Asked what she would change about the women's movement in its nascent stages 40 years ago, she said early feminists should have been more commanding. She said we were too nice. Is that right, Gloria? You were too nice. Golly. Anyway, she would have opted for a more militant advocacy of feminism. I wonder if Gloria could go back 40 years and were given the opportunity to actually see reality over the past 40 years and witness the number of women that have been abused, coerced, misused by men after Gloria pushed for the legalization of child killing. I wonder if Gloria would change her tune about the fact that we need a more militant feminism, or if she might just settle down and try to find a decent boyfriend. View. I mean, I can't understand 90% of what that guy's singing about. That's what I love about rock and roll. You know, when the kids hear it, what is he saying, Dad? Well, nobody knows what they're saying.
It's true.
'Cause there's certain things you don't want to explain to the youngsters.
Not just that.
We really don't understand. But then in a lot of cases, we genuinely have no idea. What they're singing about, we just like the guitar lick. That's all. All right. San Francisco, California. Let's go to NBC. One San Francisco resident is proposing a ballot measure that would ban circumcision in the city of San Francisco. If passed in November of 2011, the measure would change San Francisco's police code to make it a misdemeanor to circumcise, excise, cut, or mutilate the foreskin of another person who has not attained the age of 18. So in San Francisco, they're going to I don't know if they're going to. This is just one nutcase out there who wants a fine of $1,000 up to a year in prison for anyone who circumcises. Yeah. Now, he's going to have to collect over 7,000 signatures by April. And the article closes from NBC. They say in San Francisco, he might just be able to do it. He might be able to gather the signatures as there will be a groundswell of opposition to circumcision out there in San Francisco. I don't know if I should get into the physical theory on circumcision that I heard years ago. Maybe. Do you think it's too much to even talk about this? Okay, let's just leave that aside. Anyway, in San Francisco, you're free to smoke dope, shoot up heroin, urinate, and defecate in the streets, and basically go down to the Castro and commit sins against God and humanity that are just despicable and deplorable. But they will not tolerate Happy Meals and possibly not circumcision there. And let's just leave that story at that. All right. You remember last week we did a brief update on Hillary Rodham Clinton and her travels around the world and the odd outbreak of, earthquakes, not to put too fine a point on it, but it seems like wherever Hillary goes, there's an earthquake or two. Well, here we go. Two earthquakes occurred last week shortly after Barry Ho arrived in the Indonesian capital. Two earthquakes after Barack Obama arrived there in, what's the capital of Indonesia? Katamatakar? I can't remember. No, it's not Qatar. Anyway, the earthquake struck at a depth, the first earthquake struck at a depth of 69 kilometers. Another struck at a depth of 45 kilometers, at which point Mr. Obama got out of there. Because it's like, you know, it's almost as if hell was stirred up to receive him. And anyway, he fled the area. Mr. Obama was forced to leave Indonesia ahead of schedule due to the fact that he thought God was going to open up the earth and swallow him alive down into hell. Oh, no. Due to an ash cloud caused by multiple volcanic eruptions of the Mount Merapi volcano there in Quinajingatapakapar, Indonesia. All right. And now on to some economics. Tens of thousands of students took to the streets of London in demonstrations that spiraled out of control when a fringe group of protesters hurled missiles at police and occupied the building housing Conservative Party headquarters. This is from The Guardian in London. Ministers and protesters acknowledge that this is just the beginning of public anger over cuts in government largesse and increases in college costs over there in London. So they're rioting in the streets over this stuff over there in Europe. Could this ever happen in America? I really don't think so. I don't think we're the type to riot, you know, over government cheese. I certainly hope not. Yeah, the government there in London, they're increasing tuition fees while cutting funding for university teachers. And so the students are setting things on fire, smashing windows and occupying political offices. Demonstrators, yeah, we got all that. Oh, they shattered windows and they waved anarchist flags. And masked activists traded punches with police. And they occupied the headquarters of the Conservative Party. Liberal Democrat headquarters, according to The Guardian, on a nearby street, were not targeted. Oddly enough. It's probably because that's from whence the riots were being directed. Possibly. I mean, that's just an opinion. What do we have here now from the war file? We're rapidly running out of time. There's a new commander of Al-Qaeda, apparently. His name is Saif. Give me a minute here. Saif al-Adel, or Sword of the Just. Sword of the Just. According to Syed Salim Shahzad, who should not be confused with Saif al-Adel, Syed Salim Shahzad, a Pakistani expert on Al-Qaeda, says that the strategy of one Saif al-Adel is to stage multiple small terror operations using the resources of affiliates and allies wherever possible. The idea is for small but often attacks. rather than one-off terror spectaculars like we experienced back on September 11th. Al-Adel, oddly enough, was held by Iran with a group of al-Qaeda fugitives for several years, but in April of this year, he was released from Iranian custody along with Sa'ad bin Laden, Osama bin Laden's son, and top al-Qaeda operatives Suleiman al-Ghaith and Mahfouz al-Wadi. I'm sorry, Mahfouz al-Walid. Iran swapped the terrorists for a Pakistani-based diplomat that al-Qaeda had captured. I don't know why I'm reading this story. I mean, it just creeps me out to read all these Muslim names and realize that all these guys are running around out there free and that Iran let them go, and they've got this new strategy. They say that Osama bin Laden himself appointed this fellow. I find that hard to believe, seeing as I believe, obviously, that Osama bin Laden's been dead for quite some time. But obviously, the movement that he participated in, he didn't create it. I believe the original movement was started somewhere around the 6th century A.D., but the movement to basically make war against Christianity and Western civilization. That movement does continue, as we note here. So just, I guess, be vigilant. I don't know. From the politics file, from a Dateline of the United Nations, the un-nuclear chief said last Monday he still can't confirm that all aspects of Iran's nuclear program are peaceful. He's just not, he can't confirm that every aspect of what Iran is doing in regards to pursuing nuclear fission there. We just can't be sure that all of it is peaceful. And he expressed serious concern at North Korea's refusal to allow the return of nuclear inspectors. This fella's name, he's the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Yukiya Amano. And he took over the post from Mohammed Al-Baradei. And I think Yukiya, is he Japanese? Does that sound Japanese? Mm-hmm. All right, well, at least he's not a Muslim. I mean, Al-Baradei was a Muslim. We had in charge of keeping an eye on Muslims trying to get the bomb. What happened? Well, Pakistan blew up a bomb, for crying out loud. So we got a Japanese guy, but he's obviously a moron. Because he's not sure if all aspects of Iran's nuclear program are peaceful. So there you go. Nancy Pelosi, she's whining this week. She says she's going to run for minority leader. And she says, we didn't lose the election because of me. Now listen to what she says here, because I thought this was very telling. She said, any party, meaning the Republican Party, that cannot turn 9.5% unemployment into political gains should hang up the gloves. So you see how Pelosi, she views all this as just a political game. She is a purely political animal. I don't think she cares a whit about the hundreds of thousands of people who are actually out of work, through no fault of their own in many cases, and the devastation that her liberal policies have wrought upon the nation. I really don't think she cares. It's all just political calculation to her. And she's going to run, and I think that unless she's persuaded by Democrat Party bigwigs to step aside, I think she will win. She will be the minority leader. She says, the reason they had to take me down, meaning the Republicans, is because I've been effective. Now, there's that, you cannot argue with that. Nancy Pelosi and her ilk, who promote utter rebellion against the founding principles of this nation and the God that blessed it, who promotes homosexuality, abortion. She's been very effective. I mean, you look around, she's been in politics for about 40 years. You take Nancy Pelosi's philosophy and look at the last 40 years of history. The one thing you cannot argue is that Nancy Pelosi has been effective. She certainly has. You got to give her credit for that. Got to give the devil her due, so to speak. She has been effective. All right. What do I have here from the politics file? 15 Democrats have said they don't want her to run. Even the New York Times editorial page has called on Pelosi to step aside. So the obvious question Is she mad with power? Is she drugged? Is she completely insane? Or is she just an effective Democrat? And she knows she doesn't have to step aside because I think they pretty much got rid of anyone in the Democratic Party who was even moderately moderate. And now it's all just a bunch of, Pelosi types. They've managed to totally take over the party, and she'll probably run for a leadership post, and she'll win. And after the Republicans screw things up for 2 or 4 years, she'll probably take over again. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. That's like a bad dream going down that. All right, on a brighter note, Governor Rick Perry of Texas, in a 12-minute speech at Augie's Barbed Wire Smokehouse Barbecue, took on the federal government from health care reform to Social Security. He says we should repeal Obama's health care legislation in its entirety. Governor Perry criticized President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal as an early 20th century progressive era movement that gave the federal government access to our wallets via taxation. Unfortunately, said Governor Rick Perry, the New Deal has essentially become the third rail of American politics. Nobody can criticize it. He said, I want people to be afraid not... This is just difficult to read. He says, I want people to be afraid not to talk about that social... This guy's obviously from Texas. He's grammatically challenged. I'll try to translate from Texas, from Texan, into something resembling English. He wants people to talk about the fact that Social Security is bankrupt and is a Ponzi scheme. Yeah, he said it. Ponzi scheme. Yeah. All right, well, Rick Perry. If Glenn Beck's not running for president, well, Rick Perry is. I think Rick's been watching a lot of Glenn Beck. I had that. Someone asked me in a conversation last week when I was pontificating on the economic future of the United States in the short term. They said, Doug, have you been watching Glenn Beck? And, you know, here's the thing about Glenn Beck. He's a little nuts. He is. He's a little nuts. But he's got a great research staff, and they have uncovered and tied together things that I've been aware of for years. Things that I've talked about for years, things that I've believed for years. His staff has done a great job of putting it all together. And, Glenn Beck can string a sentence or two together, and he's doing an okay job. But he is a little bit crazy. But some might argue the same about myself. All right. The big news this week on these pat-downs. I mean, I haven't experienced this yet because I haven't flown since the new... The body scanners and the pat-downs. According to Reuters, with the busiest holiday travel season nearing, flyers face long security lines and new rigorous pat-down checks begun in recent weeks aimed at discovering hidden explosives. As a result, some travelers are questioning whether to fly at all. The TSA says it's deploying these body scanning machines and physical pat-downs to thwart attacks by terrorists. Yeah. Well, between pilot... There's been a lot of talk now between the pilots union and the TSA because a lot of these pilots are saying, look, I'm not doing the body scanner and I don't want anybody's hand in my crotch before I get on the plane, okay? I'm trying to go to work here. Could I have some dignity? I mean, you're going to let me fly the plane. Does it matter if I have a bomb? You're giving me the plane, for crying out loud. Anyway, so executives from the travel industry, the pilots union, they're all very upset. They met with Homeland Security Secretary Jack Napolitano last week trying to figure something out. She's not backing down. During a trip last Sunday, a father and his 8-year-old son were selected for extra screening. Now, the father said that the TSA officer described what he was about to do to this man's 8-year-old son before he conducted the aggressive pat-down. And then he patted the boy down, and the father said, I didn't think it was going to be as horrible as it was, but when it happened, it was horrible. To watch your son be manhandled by a potential deviant freak working for the TSA. Have you seen these people? Who are these people working for the TSA? I mean, who's to say that deviants and lowlife scumbags, perverts, wouldn't gravitate toward this line of work where they can feel people up all day. Do you think that's impossible? I think it's highly likely. I know, maybe I'm paranoid. But you should see some of these TSA people that I've had to... Well, I've just had to hold my... I've just had to bite my tongue, frankly. All right. The nation's richest counties surround Washington, D.C. Uh-huh. Loudoun County, Fairfax County, Virginia. The two richest in the country, right there around Washington, D.C. The other counties... how many? 7 out of the 10 richest counties in the country are right around Washington, D.C. The other three are close to New York City, where there are still a few people not employed directly by the government or the mafia, apparently. Still making a lot of money there in New York City. All right, I suppose we're just about out of time. Let's see here. Oh, on that note, this from the Washington Examiner. Members of a key panel created by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, better known as Barry Ho's stimulus bill, have scheduled a meeting on November 22nd to consider a way to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse of Recovery Act funds. The meeting will be held at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Phoenix. Try to figure out how to save money. Hillary Clinton, no new earthquakes this week, but she has announced new funding to the Palestinian Authority. Clinton said the issue was at the top of the agenda. The issue that's at the top of her agenda was the need for Israeli-Palestinian peace talks to move toward a two-state solution. Two states, yeah. Do you remember who first demanded a Palestinian state? Yes, hijacker, bomber, murderer, and Nobel Peace Prize winner Yasser Arafat. And now it's like gospel. You can't blaspheme the idea of a two-state solution. The terrorist Palestinians will get their state. Let's see. Egypt's foreign minister and other Arabs and Muslims are demanding that the Jews stop building apartment buildings. How dare you insult the Prophet Muhammad by building apartment complexes in East Jerusalem? What else do we have? Let's see. Palestinian chief negotiator Saeb Araket says this new funding will help the Palestinian Authority pay down its debt, continue to deliver services and security to keep people going, rockets, bombs, and anti-Semitic propaganda. Whoops. Did I edit that last part out? Mr. Araket did not mean for that to go to air. All right, finally, 6 years after his death, the keepers of Arafat's memory are gathering thousands of objects, photographs, pistols, sunglasses, military outfits for display in a Yasser Arafat museum that's going to be constructed at his former West Bank headquarters. Ynet News in Israel says Arafat was branded by some as an arch terrorist and celebrated by others as the father of the national Palestinian movement. The same thing. Arch-terrorist Palestinian national movement. Anyway, one particular piece being held for the museum is the kefaya that Arafat wore during his final days. They say the kefaya is still streaked with yellow stains and has not been washed. So it's pretty much the way he wore it every day. Nothing's changed there either. All right, that's the worldview for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at KGov.com, at American Right to Life, at Personage USA, and of course my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.